something KPFT has been doing since 1970.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
Great storytellers take listeners on astonishing journeys. I'm Hank Rubicek, producer of So What's Your Story, Thursdays at 5. Our award-winning show has brought you stories since 2008, and with your generous donations, we're going to keep it going. 713-526-5738 or kpft.org, and point to So What's Your Story as one of your favorites. Extraordinary stories told by ordinary people only on KPFT Houston's Community Radio.
Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch. And that tells us that it is 5 p.m. Thursday and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. We are aired only on Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 FM here in Houston or kpft.org on the internet. I'm Mary Edgerton, tonight's host, and along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on journeys through the windows of their souls, on fanciful trips amid worlds of enchantment, before returning us safely to the present. I am bringing you some familiar voices tonight. My guests are Greg Odell and Warren Holloman, both members of our storytelling team. Our radio audience may remember them as storytelling hosts on So What's Your Story? These two former hosts are also great storytellers, and they have turned this talent into written stories using the playwriting form. First, I would like to hear each of them tell us the story of how they went from everyday Greg and Warren to Greg and Warren storytellers, to Greg and Warren playwrights. Plays are a very important form of storytelling. As you may know, I've had several shows on plays in the past. For one thing, there's a stage with a setting, there's a script, there is often background music. There are other voices and actors to help portray the story. Very importantly, it is live. You cannot stand before an audience and say, wait, cut, let's redo that scene. Also, plays are a very ancient form of storytelling. They date back to the beginnings of literary history and storytelling among human cultures. Our playwriting history goes back to the Greek and Roman times, and I am sure even before that. Warren, I know people know you. You worked many years in the medical center as, what can I say, a master of wellness, as a psychologist. But how did you get into storytelling and, more importantly, playwriting?
Well, hi, Mary. Thank you so much for having me back on the show. I was a young faculty member back in the late 1980s at Baylor College of Medicine, and there was this new field called medical humanities, and I got interested in that, and I taught several courses in that to medical students, and one of the courses was called The Patient, and in that course, we we focused on the types of patients that medical students in particular and doctors in general tend to feel uncomfortable around. And for example, the dying patient, a medical student is typically 23, 24 years old, and it's just not familiar to them to be around someone who's facing death. So when we did the segment on the dying patient, we did a couple of things. I would invite patients who literally were dying that I knew who would talk with the students. I would invite families of patients who had recently deceased. But then the other thing I did, more traditional, was we would read books and stories and plays about people who were dying. The most popular story for the students was an old story, The Death of Ivan Illich by Leo Tolstoy. And although it had been written many decades before in Russia, it was just such a perfect clinical description of what it's like to be given a serious diagnosis and to gradually come to realize that you're facing your mortality. And the student, this was a kind of a small experimental elective, 10 or 12 students, and they liked it so much. They said, this is a shame that all of our classmates can't experience this story. And then one said, well, I was a drama major in college. We could present it as a play. And I said, how will we do that? So she and I took some dialogues out of the story and created a very simple theater experience for the students. We presented it at noon one day. Now, you got to understand, you know, Mary, medical students typically have like 6 or 7 hours of class a day, 3 or 4 or 5 hours of study at night. And yet the auditorium, which seated over 200 people, was full for the noon hour. And when the show was over, we just did a simple staged reading. They stayed another 15 or 20 minutes just for a free-for-all kind of discussion in that auditorium. And in that moment, I realized that drama, like Shakespeare said, the play is the thing. There's a way that drama can engage an audience in a way that other types of communication do not, because it engages you emotionally. You see the drama of your life, and you also see all those issues come to the fore. So I was just sold on drama at that point, and I've been trying to write plays ever since.
Wow. Yeah, isn't that great? And I think you said something that I really didn't put into words before. It's a multimedia drama. There's the visual senses that are excited. There's the auditory senses that are excited. And then of course there's your emotion that's carried along with the combination of those. So it's a multi-sensory experience.
Right. I just think, you know, medical students typically are very sort of scientific and rigorous, and they're not touchy-feely. At least at that time, they were not. But they look up on the stage and they see their grandmother, they see their father, they see people they can identify with going through, you know, and they suddenly begin to have empathy for them, and they want to understand them and help them. It was a very powerful thing.
I can imagine. Warren, I happen to know, having discussed this very moving topic of death, that you also have a comedic talent. One of your short plays was selected for a comedy showcase of short plays, and it was called The Existential Crisis Hotline. I saw it at Mildred's Umbrella Theater, and my date, who did not even know that this was my good friend's play as it was being shown, nearly split a gut. So, Warren, you are multi-talented. Do you remember that experience?
Oh, yeah, that was very gratifying. But you can tell from the title of the play that everything I do does have something to do with death. I mean, it was supposed to be about a man and woman meeting on an elevator and falling in love. But of course, it was about the existential crisis that they were facing. But I guess that was the humor of it all.
It was definitely. Do you have other stories that you're thinking of turning into a play right now?
I'll mention one and I'll tell you a little more about the other. One of my other hobbies is local history. My brother and I wrote a book about the history of our hometown. And we've sold a few copies, but I've realized a lot of people don't read history books these days. And so I'm in the process of trying to write a play about the history of the town because it's just such an amazing story. I want more people to see it. The other project I've got going is my wife's father, who died not very long ago, was a veterinarian in Brazoria County, just a little bit south of Houston. And for much of his career, large animal vet. And he had so many hilarious stories. And Marcia, my wife and I realized that those stories should be turned into a book or a play. So we're in the process of writing down as many of the stories as we can remember. We had recorded many of them. And yeah, if there's time, I'd like to share one of them with you.
Oh, would you please?
Okay. Now, I know you grew up on a ranch. Was it a, did you have dairy cows or was it?
No, we had very different. We had beef cattle and yeah, we were what you would call pre-feedlot. So we would raise them to be a yearling and then sell them to the dealers who would take them up to, say, Nebraska and Kansas, where they really fatten them up from yearling on and then sell them. So we were the early grass-fed version.
Well, just a little footnote on the history of cattle farming in Texas to make this story make sense. Brazoria County, which, by the way, is much larger in square miles than the state of Rhode Island. And back in the 1950s, it was a center of dairy farming. There were hundreds of dairy farms there. So when my father-in-law started his practice, a lot of his work was driving all over a county larger than Rhode Island to all these dairy farms. Then what happened in the 1960s is the dairy farmers started transitioning to other types of farming and just to raising cattle like your family did. But the story I'm going to tell you is about a farm that's kind of in transition between dairy farming and cattle farming. And then just a note, dairy barns, as you probably know, are all built the same way. On one side, they've got these stalls where you milk the cows. And the other side, they've got these places where you keep the milk and you clean the equipment. And in the middle, there's basically a road right down the middle called a breezeway. So remember that, because that's an important part of the story. Final thing, if you didn't grow up on a farm, you might not know what a twitch is. It's a stick, a heavy stick with a loop of a rope on it, or it could be a chain. And you put that around a horse's neck and twist it, and you hold him still with that twitch. And of course, a horse is 1,000 pounds, so it's a challenge to do that. So dairy barns, twitches, Brazoria County, transition from dairy farming to regular cattle farming, cattle ranches. That's the context of this story. Now I'm going to try to become my father-in-law and tell the story the way he would do it. One Saturday afternoon in 1956, the telephone rang. It was Alan Brossard, and he said, "Hurry, my horse is bleeding bad." So I rushed down to the clinic. I got my stuff. Brossard Dairy was right there on the edge of Alvin. So I was there in about 15 minutes. As I drove up, I saw that a lot of people had gathered there in the breezeway of the barn. The horse was tied there and they were all watching. So here I am, a young veterinarian just starting, and I got this big audience of cowboys there come to watch me try to save the life of that horse. And then I saw Alan Brossard standing there with his wife. And I noticed she was very pregnant. Now, the horse was bleeding really bad. He had cut an artery in the lower leg just above the hoof, and he was shooting the blood out 1.5 to 2 feet. a spout of blood 1.5 to 2 feet. So I told Alan to grab the twitch and to put the twitch on the horse's nose to hold him still. Now the artery was way down inside the lower leg. I took my forceps and I stabbed and I stabbed. Fortunately, I got it and I was able to stop the bleeding. Now that was supposed to be the hard part. And so I breathed a sigh of relief and I prepared to finish the job. I prepared to tie off the artery below my forceps. And it was about that time, all of a sudden, when I heard this loud bang, kaboom! Well, it turns out Grandpa Broussard, he was a bird hunter, and he had this prize bird dog. And that prize bird dog was in heat. And when his prize bird dog went in heat, he had a special place to put that dog. He had a special dog pen that was inside the cattle pen. By this time, they had just transitioned out of dairy farming into cattle farming. He kept the bird dog in a dog pen inside the cattle pen so that the male dogs in the area couldn't get to his prize bird dog. But somehow, and you know how that happens, and a dog had gotten in there, and he was trying to breed Mr. Broussard's prize bird dog. So Grandpa Broussard, you can probably guess what he did. He grabbed his gun and he shot that dog. So the blast was so loud that scared the horse so bad, she kicked and knocked all the stuff out of my hands, and all my medical equipment was lying there in the dust and the dirt. In the process, she also knocked the forceps off of that artery and it started bleeding again, spouting blood out as far as 2 feet from the horse's leg. So we grabbed all that stuff up and cleaned it up as good as we could and cleaned up the leg as good as we could, and we started all over again. I started stabbing in there again with the forceps, and finally I found that artery and I clamped it with the forceps. And then I took the suture and I looped behind the clamp and I started trying to tie it again. Now the first knot is always the hardest, and I was in the process of tying that knot when all of a sudden somebody yelled, "Look out, look out, here come the cows." Well, turns out that Grandpa Broussard, after he shot that dog, he had drugged that dead dog out of the dog pen and he had drugged it way out in the pasture. But he forgot and left the cattle pen gate open. Now, as I said, the Broussards had sold their dairy cows by now, but now they had range cattle. And so when somebody yelled, look out, here come the cows, I looked out and 20 cows were stampeding through the breezeway of the barn right there where I was trying to save that horse's life. I was able to jump out of the way, but the horse wasn't so lucky. They bumped the horse. They knocked him to one side. It knocked my medical stuff off to the other side and knocked my forceps off again. At that point, all the men there, the cowboys, grabbed a saddle and a horse, and they took off after the cattle. Would you believe the cattle were heading right to downtown Alvin, right down Main Street of Alvin? So the men were all gone. Mr. Broussard and his Grandpa Broussard were gone. And all that was left was me and Mr. Broussard's wife, Peggy, the pregnant wife. I said, "Do you mind holding this twitch?" She said, "I can do that." So I gathered my forceps. And by that time, the artery had been exposed for so long, I could see it better. And I didn't have to dig so long inside the leg to find it. So I just had to clamp it off. But while I was doing that, I started hearing some moaning and groaning. And it wasn't the horse. I looked up, Peggy was bent over, and it looked like she was in pain. She was in labor. So here I am, I've got a horse bleeding to death and a pregnant woman in labor, and nobody else is out there in that barn but us. So I knew Grandma Broussard was in the house. So I ran all the way over to the house and I said, "Grandma Broussard, hurry, Peggy's in labor." So she came out and they got the pickup truck and they took off for the hospital. And here I was now by myself with that horse and he's still bleeding to death. And now I didn't have anybody to hold the twitch. So I did a rather dumb thing, I guess, but it was the only thing I knew to do. I was a young veterinarian. I took the forceps. I was able to get in there and clamp it off with the horse jumping all around, but there was no way I could sew it up. So I just tied the forceps to the horse's leg with some gauze, and I tied it off as best I could. The horse was jumping around, moving. I knew that knot that wouldn't hold, but it was the only thing I knew to do. I turned the horse loose and I left. At that point, the cowboys were still out chasing the cattle through downtown Alvin, and it was getting late, so I went home and went to bed. Now, I got to confess, I didn't sleep too good that night because I knew at some point the horse was going to knock that gauze off its leg and it would start bleeding again, and it would probably die, and they would see the sloppy job I had done. So I got up real early the next morning, long before daylight, and I sneaked back over to the Broussard what used to be the Broussard Dairy Farm. I didn't want them to see what I had done. Fortunately, they were not up out of bed yet. And fortunately, the forceps were still on. And by that time, it had coagulated, the blood had. So all I had to do was take the forceps off and I bandaged it real good. I left before they ever woke up. I found out later that Peggy had a baby boy that night. I found out later that all the cows came home and the horse did just fine.
Oh, that was wonderful, Warren. Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and the point at which Peggy starts to go into labor.
Well, I mean, what else can happen?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And the idea that she was perfectly, she was a farm wife. She was perfectly willing to hold the twitch on that horse, even though she was 9 months pregnant, even though that horse was 1,000 pounds. It was just incredible. Yeah.
Wow.
He had so many stories like that. They were all hilarious.
And for a young vet to be out there with all the cowboys who know everything.
Yeah.
That's really tough.
But let me say, part of the beauty of your story that I think it's hard for people to see is that you had to take those events and paint that picture for us and take us there. And I was right there with you and I could see everything, but that's only because of the writer and the storyteller that you are.
Well, thank you, Greg. I appreciate that. I heard these stories many, many times. And I wish I did record a lot of them, but the quality isn't so good. I wish I had done a really good job because he was a great storyteller. And like you say, Greg, you have to kind of add a little bit because, for example, with the bleeding of the horse's artery, what my father-in-law would say is, and the blood was spouting this far. And so I had to remember how far apart his hands were, and it was like 1.5 to 2 feet.
Right.
And I know it's a little nerdy to begin with the history lesson, but it helps to understand that
it's important because I know we had a ranch, and so we had a corral, and. Yeah. You had your cattle inside the corral, and the last thing you wanted to do was let those cattle out if you didn't have a boundary around them. And I have to say, cows aren't very smart, and I think it's funny when people ask me, how did you round up? And I said, well, remember, we were in a semi-arid area, so there was only one place those cattle could get water, and that was inside the corral. the water trough was in the corral. So when we wanted to round up, my father would say, once my brother could drive, okay, John, once you head out tonight and close the corral gates. And I would go out with him. It'd be around midnight. And we'd go down and cattle were asleep in the woods and we would close the gates. And then you just wait about a day and a half. Uh-huh. And you come down and you drive and you park your truck maybe about a mile away. And you walk down around the side of where you expect the cattle to be, you know, roaming around all gathered there, mooing, trying to get into water. They're not very smart. Mm. And you kind of sneak around, you open up that gate, and they all run in, and you close it behind them. And now you've rounded up your cattle. And that's how you do it in a semi-arid area. But yeah, rounding up cattle is a... there can be an art to it.
Yeah. And that you painted a good picture there, just like Greg said. I try to imagine what it would be like to round up cattle in downtown Alvin.
Oh, yeah, right.
That must have been hilarious.
See, we didn't have to know how to lasso our cattle because they wanted water. So we just opened the gate and they ran in and we closed it. And then, you know, we had various little chutes, you know, where you put them down a funnel and cut them off with the little cutting gates. You have a few at a time going down this chute to work with. But we did not have to lasso then. But if you're chasing your cattle downtown in Alvin, I think you have a rope out.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, I think that would have been a funny scene.
I am glad that you are collecting these stories. They're very, very important. We're going to break now for station identification. You are listening to KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio. Also broadcast at 91.9 FM in Huntsville and 89.5 FM in Galveston. Let's not forget that you can listen to KPFT anywhere on the internet by choosing www.kpft.org. Our show, So What's Your Story, is a community-based storytelling radio show broadcast every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central Time. But, as you will hear, you can listen to the show after it has been aired. I will tell you about that. But as I tell my friends, I can make a short story long. So let me start with telling you first about our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, at www.HoustonStorytellers.org. And yes, that's Houston Storytellers, one word, no spaces. Indeed, when you go to that website, you can replay any of our previous shows from So What's Your Story by selecting the radio show tab. They are all there. Now, how would you like to become a storyteller? Join the Houston Storytellers Guild and attend their monthly story swap on the fourth Tuesday of the month. Check out their calendar tab and grab the Zoom information for the next virtual swap, which will be July 26th, and find any other exciting events on the calendar. I see that they have listed the San Antonio Storyteller Association's monthly story night, the first Wednesday of each month, 7 to 8 p.m. Central Time. You can visit the Houston Storytellers Guild site and find the link to the San Antonio monthly stories. Another way to get into storytelling is by joining the Texas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. You can find them at www.texasstorytelling.com. And I will spell that for you. It's TEJASSTORYTELLING.com. And hey, our friends at the Moth are back at Warehouse Live in person the second Tuesday of the month. Looks like that will be August 9th next time around, and the theme will be happy. I like that. I like being happy. I like listening to happy stories. I'm looking forward to it. Check out their Facebook page, The Moth in Houston. Speaking of Facebook, you can find us at So What's Your Story on Facebook. Please visit us. Ah, yes. And please like us. You can suggest storytellers or themes on Facebook or by emailing us at swys@kpft.org. So get on there and give us some comments and feedback. And now, back to some storytelling, now with Greg. So Greg, first, how did you get into storytelling?
Well, Mary, let me preface this by saying you're a little bit in the doghouse with me. You expect me to follow Warren? That's not a fair thing to ask of anyone. But I'm going to do my very best. But I think
you're going to do just fine.
Well, thank you. So how did I get into storytelling? It was not entirely intentional. Some people know this story that, you know, I was a big fan of The Moth and I listened to it for years, but somehow it had escaped me that there was a Houston Moth competition. I had no idea. And one evening when I was working for a law firm during the day, I just kind of thought it would be interesting to drive for Uber for a while. And for someone who's interested in people's stories, there's no better thing than to be an Uber driver. One evening, I wasn't feeling all that well. I started to clock out early, but I picked up a guy near U of H, Connor Clifton, a local comedian who was going to this Moth story slam he told me about. I was amazed. I was like, I listen to it all the time. I've always kind of thought that maybe I could do that. And he said, well, they give you the theme a month before. And this week, the theme is delusions. A few hundred people come. And if you want to tell a story, you tell a 5-minute story, you put your name on a piece of paper and they put it in a hat. And throughout the evening, they draw 10 names. And if your story gets called, you get up there and tell the story you've been preparing. I had thought about it and I thought, delusions. I said, you know, I think I got a good story for that. So I parked my Uber. I went inside and I really was amazed to see, you know, hundreds of people gathered there on, on a Tuesday evening. And this was April 15th, 2015. And the host, Dusty Rhodes, got up and she kind of warmed everybody up and she drew a name out of the hat. And she said, our first storyteller of the evening is Greg Audell. And I'll always be thankful that my name was drawn first because I wasn't trying to do it like anybody else. I just got up and told my story. I didn't have time to think about it. And I got up before the microphone and I don't know. I felt incredibly comfortable. And I said, you know, my family, when they were going through a challenging divorce, I developed a delusion that I could become friends with the President of the United States. So I called the White House. And when the audience laughed and when they responded, I was like, oh, I like this. And I ended up winning the competition that night. And a young woman approached me as I came off the stage. Her name was Shannon McKerchie. And she worked on a show called So What's Your Story? With our producer, Hank Rubicek, and founder. And she asked me if I wanted to be on this show. I thought, well, that sounded pretty crazy. I couldn't believe someone would want me to be on a radio show. So I did the show. And honestly, I had a great time. And Hank made it just so easy to feel comfortable. And I actually went to a book reading that Hank was doing for his storytelling book before I was on the show. So I was kind of comfortable and Hank made me feel real comfortable during the episode. I just had a great time. And a couple weeks later, he called me and asked if I wanted to become a co-host along with Warren of So What's Your Story? And I just couldn't think of anything more exciting than learning how to do a radio show while doing it with master storytellers. And I got to tell you, it was one of the great experiences of my life.
Well, Greg, that's a great story. And I guess you've really discovered you have a great storytelling talent. So what message do you want our audience to get from that story?
Well, a couple of things. You know, one thing that's made me a strong storyteller is not only learning, you know, from Hank and Warren and you, but each and every guest we had every week, it was, you know, we had a kaleidoscope of storytellers, and I learned something from every single one of them. And what I would say to our audience is, if you have an opportunity to stretch your comfort level, please, please, please do go for it. Because that morning when I woke up, I had no idea that I would be on a stage in front of a few hundred people sharing a really personal story. But because I did that, my entire life trajectory has changed. And so many wonderful people and experiences have become part of it that never would have happened if I simply dropped that guy off that night, and never went in and never got on that stage.
I love that story. And I remember the first time I heard you tell a story, you also won that night. You're a multi-time Story Slam winner. Now, go ahead.
I think most storytellers know that when there's a story that's close to your heart, you share a connection with the audience that's just indescribable. You know, you can't fake a good story.
That's true. And that's one of the wonderful things about the in-person performance is that you feel the audience response. And I have to say that the first time I went from that moth in-person response to radio, there's a real transition to learn for storytelling over the radio, where you're not hearing that response, but you just have to keep the story going.
There is a transition, but I'll say always when I'm on the radio, I have a very clear picture of who I'm speaking to in my mind. And I'm not necessarily going to share it here with, because, you know, I want everyone to feel included, but I have two or three specific people that I've created in my mind and what they're doing. And those are the people I connect with when I'm on the radio.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Now, you've gone from storytelling to playwriting, and more specifically, the one-man play genre. Can you tell us how that happens?
Well, I would say, as with a lot of things in life, I don't know. If you had told me at the beginning what I was going to end up with at the end, I don't think I would have believed that I could have achieved it. It seemed kind of a Herculean task, but the way you do these things is one page at a time, one day of research at a time, one page at a time, you know, one line of thinking at a time. And I've always been frustrated by how little we know of our history as Houstonians and Texans. A lot of Texans drive on Allen Parkway every day, but they know nothing of Augustus Allen, who it's named after, or his wife, Cynthia Baldwin Allen, who played a huge role in creating our city. So I wanted to tell their stories. Shortly before the pandemic, I got a grant from the Houston Arts Alliance to write a play. The only problem was I didn't know how to write a play. And one night when I was working on a script for So What's Your Story, I was agonizing over how I was going to create this play. And I realized I don't know how to write a play, but I do know how to write radio scripts. And I'd spent 5 years helping people tell their stories via a radio show. And so then I realized that was the mode in which I could have Sam Houston and Augustus Allen tell their stories, is I could interview them and I would play all three characters. And then because of the pandemic, it went from being a public performance to needing to be filmed. And at that point, I also knew I had to play all three characters. Just being in a pandemic, there was no way we could have the rehearsal time and that I could get the actors to understand these men if I was never going to get to be in the same room with them. So then I just decided to play all three characters.
So how can we see this play?
You can go to timetravelradio.org and click on, you know, I tell you a little bit of the history about how the play came to be. And then you can click on a link and you can see the whole play. I haven't released it publicly yet, but it is available to our audience.
Wonderful. Can you read an excerpt for us?
I would love to. Thank you very much for asking me. I'll say for our audience, you know, you're about to enter a radio show within a radio show. I'm your host, Greg Audell. Funding for a program like ours that travels across centuries in search of some of history's most intriguing characters is a very expensive endeavor. Therefore, I'd like to thank our corporate contributors whose generosity affords them a chance to join us in the studio so we can learn more about them and their business. For example, a bit later, we'll be hearing from our most generous corporate sponsor, a brash young developer, barely 30 years old, by the name of, by the name of Augustus Allen. Yes, of course, Mr. Augustus Allen. We will learn about Mr. Allen later in this program. I'd also like to thank the great love of my life that inspired tonight's very special episode, the city of Houston, Texas. We'd known each other since the day I was born at Houston's legendary medical center, but we didn't really bond until we started seeing each other every single day when I was a 14-year-old freshman at Ruth Denny's High School for the Performing and Visual Arts in Montrose. Of course, I knew Houston had countless other admirers, but for me, there was no greater love. As with most obsessions, the more I learned about Houston's history, the more I needed to know. I wanted to know everything. So tonight, we'll be visiting about this fascinating city from the moment she became known by her current name, Houston. Now, just relax. Take a deep breath in and out. Relax your shoulders, your neck, and your eyes as you picture General Sam Houston. 6 feet, 6 inches tall, a relatively thin man, never more than 200 pounds, a man who is very conscious of his appearance, often changing his facial hair, who generally ate fruits and vegetables instead of meat, and who was once remembered as being dressed like George Washington in a suit of federal knee breeches and his hair in a queue. Focus, my friends. Can you see him? Now just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. My guest tonight has been many things. Let me see how many of them I can list in one breath. Are you ready? Here it goes. He has been a runaway kid, an adopted Native American, a teacher, an actor, a land speculator, attorney, attorney general, general, congressman, senator, governor twice of two different states at that, husband thrice, president of the Republic of Texas twice, and above all, an American. One of my favorite descriptions of him is as a magnificent barbarian. But the titles and positions I've listed are only pieces of this man's story, because while he was formally adopted into the Cherokee tribe and even married into their community, he's also understood to have been a racist, slave-owning alcoholic. We'll ask him about these issues and more in just a moment. How's that for a start?
Now I want to go read all about Sam Houston. Listen to your play.
Well, thank you. You can see the whole thing at timetravelradio.org. And what I've tried to do is make these people real people. And one thing we know about real people is no one is all good and no one is all bad. And if you want to ask me if these were good men or bad men, I can't answer that. They were men of their times. And I think they were fascinating men, but we try and shed light on some issues that haven't been discussed as much, such as slavery and the role of women, you know, in the creation of Houston. And the research, I became so engrossed in this research, I'm now writing a play about Charlotte Baldwin Allen, who's known as Houston's founding mother, because it's time for these stories to be told, and I certainly don't want them to die.
You know, it's very important that you say this. I don't know if you saw this in the news, I think about 2 weeks ago, Senate Bill 3 concerns itself with the Texas Board of Education and how the Texas Board of Education determines language to be used in the schools. And one of the proposals before the Texas Board of Education was that slavery, particularly in younger grades, be introduced as involuntary relocation.
Right, right.
You probably saw that. And right. I think it's so important that you point to the fact that we have to look honestly at what happened in our history. We have to address it face on. And those people that we have looked up to as heroes were not perfect. And there were many things that happened that were
and to me, it makes their stories much more fascinating, because as a child, what I learned in history did not interest me because it was boring.
It was,
but I think by showing these people as complex, real human beings, it makes the consequence of their decisions that much more incredible, particularly when they've stepped out of character for the people of their generation. So I'm hope by telling a full, more full story, it makes it a more interesting story, and then I'm able to educate while entertain, and that people want to, you know, stay for the next few minutes.
And I think we need to know the truth. I think our role as human beings on this earth is to better our surroundings and better the condition for humans and actually other living beings, yeah, our whole earth. And that if we don't learn from our mistakes, we will not do that. And therefore, we need to look back and look at the truth. I think of what's written across the tower at the University of Texas at Austin, which I attended as an undergraduate. And there are words from the Bible, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." And I thought, this is no time at all to take Senate Bill 3 to hide the truth. We must know the truth. And so I'm glad that you're presenting the truth.
That's the only, for now, that's the only kind of play I'm interested in producing, is something that sort of expands the conversation. And that doesn't mean condemning, it just means expanding the conversation so we have a more full picture of who these people were and the times they lived in.
We have to know.
And what surprised me most about this process is how much I enjoyed the writing process. I didn't honestly expect to, and I'll say the same thing about the acting. I didn't necessarily expect to enjoy it. I thought it might be overwhelming, but I really enjoyed the entire process, and that's why I'm doing another play. Then my next one is about Charlotte Baldwin. Yeah, and she's buried at Houston's Glenwood Cemetery, and I have visited her a number of times, and I have assured her that I'm going to do everything I can to tell my help tell her story. Wonderful. And if anyone wants to help me tell it, you know, I have a go on my Time Travel Radio. I have a link to my GoFundMe page to help me tell these stories. And anyone who wants to join, we need all the help we can get to get them told.
Perfect. I know these things take funding. I think you've encountered that also, Warren, having your plays read and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. Greg, you had me from the very beginning when you just started listing the wide range of professions that Sam Houston had done. So he would, you said attorney, a general, and an attorney general.
That covers. That's right. That's right.
He's the only person in history who can claim those three. And he was an actor also?
He was an actor. I mean, the more I learn about him, just the more fascinated I become. And I do think, you know, I don't want to offend anyone, but I do think there's a certain level of mental illness that he learned how to cope with in his life, because there were times he would retreat from society and was a, you know, hopeless alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And at times he would pull himself together and serve his state or his nation. And that's part of what's fascinating about him.
Right. Wow.
I have to see this. I have to pull it up and see it. Definitely.
Well, thank you. It's very encouraging, you know, to hear these comments, because as Warren will tell you, the glamorous life of a playwright is thousands of hours of research and thousands of hours of sitting alone at your computer or at least with your study dog right next to you. And you're just sitting there going, is anyone going to be interested in this? Is it making sense? Is anyone going to like it? And then when you finally get done with it, and I have to say, I'm proud of this piece. I'm like, wow, where did this come from? You know, how did these pages after pages get written? You know, I just remember slaving away one sentence at a time, and all of a sudden it's an hour long play.
Wow.
It's been a great experience.
This has been a great show.
I'm sorry?
I say this has been a great show, hearing about your both of your experiences from going from a story to a play, you know. Well, Warren talking about a story that he was teaching in Humanities for Medicine and turning that into a drama, and you talking about turning Sam Houston's life into a drama. This is really fascinating.
Well, and let me give a couple of thank yous, if I could. First and foremost, to Hank Rubicek for creating So What's Your Story and bringing us all into the storytelling community, because without that, you know, this conversation wouldn't be having, and none of my projects would be. But I also want to thank the Houston Arts Alliance that gave me a grant to write the Sam Houston play. But for that grant, this play never would have been written. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing that we have in the city of Houston.
Yeah.
Thank you. That is wonderful. So, gentlemen, do you want to say something as we say farewell to our audience as they drive home, settle in, and rejoin the regular world?
I would just
regular make world.
General statement of everybody has amazing stories to tell, and so tell your stories. But the other side of that is, because everybody has amazing stories to tell, then while it's important to be a good storyteller, it's also important to be a good story listener. So if anybody has a story to tell you, take the time to listen to them. That, and I think when we do that, we build friendships, we build communities, and we get a better sense of what life is all about.
Amen. And I'd like to take off on something Warren said earlier about recording his father-in-law. I urge all young people to record your family members and your relatives, because when they're not here, you're going to be so thankful that their stories are in their voice, that you can listen to, that you can play for future generations. And I think it's a wonderful idea to sort of start a family story library now that we can record anything anytime.
You are absolutely right. And one of my greatest regrets is, my father was a great storyteller. We listened and we retell them, but we didn't record them. And I really wish we had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if anyone learns anything from this show, I hope that's something they do.
Yeah.
Go out and do it, guys. Get your recorder now.
And Mary, thank you for having both of us. This is, you know, some of my favorite shows are when it's with our own little So What's Your Story family.
We have our own. Yes, we have a strong connection. And I really appreciate you guys for coming on the show and sharing some very personal stories and stories about very personal endeavors.
And I echo what Greg said. We've not seen each other in the flesh very much, but this, because of COVID, but these Zoom story sessions are really nice. It's nice to do.
They are. That hour has come when we have to return home. Warren Holloman and Greg Audell, thank you for sharing your stories and your creative arts with us tonight. We have traveled the expanse of stories where we visited Jewish life in the early 20th century in the Ukraine and how to present emotional experiences to medical students. And from there to being a veterinarian in Central Texas. We've gone from the discovery of the storyteller within you to putting together a one-man production about Sam Houston. But now it is time to return to your comfortable seat beside your speaker here in the real world. Thank you again, Warren and Greg, and thank you to all of our audience. I have some special music to close with you that I think you will find meaningful. Hank Rubicek Our founder and producer will be at the helm next week with more tellers and new journeys. But don't leave. Stay tuned into KPFT because Charles Hightower's R&B Gold is up next with a soothing mix of music as a balm for your soul. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. And while you're driving home or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? It's a great way to make the commute go by. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't end the way you want, it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Let me tell you what I wish I'd known when I was young and dreamed of glory. You have no control.
Who lives, who dies, who tells your story?
President Jefferson.
I'll give him this. His financial system is a work of genius. I couldn't undo it if I tried. And I've tried.
Who lives, who dies, who tells your story?
President Madison.
He took our country from bankruptcy to prosperity. I hate to admit it, but he doesn't get enough credit for all the credit he gave us.
Who lives, who dies, who tells your story?
Every other founding father's story gets told. Every other founding father gets to grow old.
And when you're gone, who remembers your name? Who keeps your flame?
Who tells your story?
Who tells your story?
Who tells your story?
Myself back in the narrative.
Eliza.
I stop wasting time on tears. I live another 50 years. It's not enough.
Eliza.
I interview every soldier who fought by your side.
She tells our story.
I try to make sense of your thousands of pages of writings. You really do write, but you're running out of time. I rely on Angelica. While she's alive, we tell your story. You do if you had more time. The Lord in his kindness, he gives me what you always wanted. He gives me more time. I raise funds in DC for the Washington Monument.
She tells my story.
I speak out against slavery. You could have done so much more if you only had time. And when my time is up, have I done enough?
The orphanage.
I established the first private orphanage in New York City.
The orphanage.
I helped raise hundreds of children. I get to see them growing
the
up.
The orphanage.
In their eyes I see you, Alexander. I see you every time. And when my time is up, have I done enough?
Tell your story.
Oh, I can't wait to see you again. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, it's so hot.
I've got something really cool for you.
Something cool? Mr. Cool Announcer Guy?
Yeah, it's the KPFT Summer Sizzle Membership Drive.
Oh, that's cool.
Dig this.
No matter how much you pledge, you'll be entered into a drawing for a brand new 8-disc box set from Warner Brothers Records, Waiting for Columbus from Little Feat.
Coming from the place they call a spider's world.
And with the right medication, we won't be lazy.
Oh, that's cool. No wonder they call it Summer Sizzle. But how come I don't feel cooler?
Turn on the air conditioner, silly.
Ooh, go to kpft.org and support community media.
Hi there.
I'm Saeed Fattouh, executive producer and host of Arab Voices radio talk show, asking you to donate to KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community station. Call us now at 713-526-5738 or do it online at kpft.org and make your pledge of support .org and make your pledge of support to keep commercial-free